Hello and welcome to The Short Squeeze, a podcast about what's happening in financial markets in the coming week. I'm Lucy Battersby, editor of Markets Live, a daily live blog on the Sydney Morning Herald and The Age websites. This week, we're quickly discussing the economic news coming our way. We'll have a look at the likely impact on iron ore prices after a Brazilian producer was forced to shut down a mine following a COVID-19 outbreak. We'll look at why oil prices are rising again and the US Federal Reserve meeting. This morning, I'm joined by IG Markets analyst Kyle Rodder. Good morning, Kyle.
Good morning.
So there's a little bit of data coming out this week. We could do it in chronological order, starting with the weekend that just passed, because we saw that China's imports were down a bit more than people were expecting, down 17% compared to a year ago, one of the steepest declines they've had in about 4 years. They did surge in April, but they're now lower than they were in January or February when major cities like Wuhan were locked down. Was it a big surprise that China isn't importing as much as people were expecting?
Well, I think it goes to the sort of argument of how the Chinese policymakers now are trying to engineer their recovery. And they're starting, I think, from the supply side. So trying to boost industrial demand, infrastructure spending, that side of the economy to try and generate growth more broadly. And hopefully that starts to trickle through to the demand side where consumers can start to feel a little bit more confident, especially as their labour market starts to recover and the job activity in the jobs market starts to pick up. But I mean, the data over the weekend was probably shrugged off, judging by the price action just on Monday. But it does speak of just sort of, I guess, the tentative rebound in the Chinese economy where all this stimulus is being pumped in, like I said, to the supply side of the equation. But it's taking a little bit of time for the actual consumer in China to feel confident again and go back to where they were before the COVID-19 crisis.
And coal imports were down about 20%, even though most of the coal-fired power stations are back up and running.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, it's this sort of tentative rebound where it sort of shows that after shutting down an economy for a period, it's not like you can just sort of switch it back on again and everything goes back to normal. So once again, one of those things that the market seemed to have shrugged off this week in the broader euphoria of what's going on in the world. But I guess China's the proxy for everyone at the moment, given that they were the first one into the crisis and the first one out to how economies may adjust to this sort of new normal. And so far, so good, but it hasn't been perhaps the V-shaped or robust recovery in Chinese economic activity that might have been necessarily hoped for, at least so far.
And domestically this week, we've got the banks spewing out a bit of data that they're able to collect based on customer activity. We've got the ANZ Jobs, NAB Business Confidence and the Commonwealth Bank weekly card spending. Are you expecting to see an increase in consumer sentiment?
It'll be a fascinating one. I think, broadly speaking, market participants are estimating that there will be a bit of a pickup in consumer sentiment. And it'll be really interesting just to sort of contrast, I think, for consumers and business sentiment when we get that too. The perceptions of the current environment with how things ought to be in the future. With this recession compared to other recessions, we've sort of seen probably a bigger hit to sentiment overall than's been seen in previous downturns, both domestically and across the globe. But the big difference has been that consumers and businesses have been reasonably optimistic, at least in relation to the past, as to where the economy will go. Again, that, you know, this will be a sort of a short-lived thing and the wheels of the economy can be turned back on quite quickly once the shutdowns are ended and we can go back to normal. So it's expected that with, obviously, lockdowns coming to something of an end or that process is underway, that sentiment will pick up. But it'll be really fascinating to see if that kind of outlook for the future remains the same.
We've also got new home lending values for April. They're expected to drop by 10%. So it'll be quite a interesting move if they do. And of course, the US Federal Reserve is meeting to discuss rates, and we'll talk about that a little bit later. Meanwhile, there's been a bit of uncertainty about iron ore prices. It's a big factor for many Australian investors, given the size and the weight of the iron ore producers on the ASX, BHP, Billiton and Fortescue, which is up at around historical highs. Over the weekend, there was some big news out of Brazil where producer Vale was told that they are going to have to shut down the Itabira complex, which produces about 2.7 million tonne of iron ore a month. No one's quite sure what the demand for iron ore is going to be because it surged up in April and May. But I've been chatting to some analysts who say, well, that might just have been making up for slow months in January and February in China. Carl, what are you seeing about future expected demand for iron ore?
Well, the price action suggests that the outlook's really, really bullish. And there's two sides to this story at the moment too, and it goes back to the Chinese story, that there will be a real pickup in the demand for iron ore as China effectively tries to, as it has done in the past repeatedly, create this sort of export-driven recovery in its economy. But like you just alluded to before, there is that supply side of the equation now where the situation in Brazil as how the government is handling the COVID-19 crisis there has been obviously abhorrent and it's spiraling out of control, and there's this huge supply disruptions, which is, you know, basically curbing global supply of iron ore. So at the moment, I mean, we're tipping slightly above $100 or so on iron ore. We have done in the last couple of weeks. You know, overall, things look very, very constructive for the price of iron ore. We've seen a pretty considerable breakout to the upside. And I mean, if this is only just the beginning of the economic recovery and it's going to be engineered by a rebound in Chinese industrial activity, and, you know, this situation in Brazil continues to spiral out of control. I mean, the bull case for iron ore is quite high, although you might argue that the lion's share of the gains we've already experienced.
Can I give you an alternate point of view? I was chatting to a Singapore-based analyst yesterday, and she said the key will be to look at the steel market, because steel is, you know, they buy iron ore to make steel. And she believes that it might actually drop off quite substantially in June and July, mostly because it's the wet and summer seasons in Southeast Asia, and it becomes a bit too, construction just slows down because it's too hot and it's too wet for people to be on construction sites.
Interesting.
And she also said that the steel mills, their margins are getting squeezed because the cost of iron ore is rising so much, and they're probably going to start using either recycled steel, or they might be using scrap, or cheaper, lower grades.
Interesting.
So basically, no one knows what's going to happen in the second half.
Mm.
So steel demand is expected to shrink by about 6%, but I think that's mostly due to declines in Europe and North America. China's certainly doing its best to maintain steel demand.
Absolutely. Interesting.
All right. Thanks, Carl.
IG is a world-leading online trading provider, giving traders access to over 16,000 global financial markets on our award-winning platforms. With over 45 years of experience, you can trade with confidence when with IG. Visit ig.com.au for more information. All trading involves risks. Issued by IG Markets Limited, AFSL 220440.
Welcome back. In the second half, we like to talk about topics that are popping up on our radar. A few months ago, we went into details about the oil prices and especially a OPEC meeting after which Saudi Arabia decided that they would suddenly reduce prices. They were trying to get everyone else in OPEC to agree to production cuts. It kind of backfired on them because global demand probably fell a bit more than anyone was expecting. And oil prices have been on a real roller coaster since then. A mostly downwards roller coaster, but they might be picking up now with Saudi Arabia suddenly, unexpectedly pushing prices up. And Carl, what have we got for oil prices at the moment? They're back over $40 a barrel in some markets, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. I mean, it's been an extraordinary move. I mean, Brent got to, I think, $42 after the US jobs report on Friday night. So obviously there's that big element there that everyone's expecting that global energy demand will pick up again as the global economy starts to recover. But I guess the politics of this is fascinating too. There were some concerns that perhaps some OPEC nations weren't complying with production cuts. There was a meeting over the weekend which extended existing output cuts, and there was, I suppose, some kind rhetoric amongst OPEC Plus members that, you know, they will ensure that they are complying to these particular production cuts. I guess the fascinating thing from here is that given we've seen this extraordinary rally now, there'll be a lot of self-interest that will start to emerge between member states in OPEC, where especially Russia, which, you know, can now prosper very much with an oil price where it is now, whether strategically it makes sense for them to push back on further cuts in the future or anything to try and push prices even higher in the future on the basis of trying to keep a squeeze on, say, US shale, which is still mostly unprofitable at these levels, although it's argued that with some of the reduction in capacity in the United States that those break-even costs on average have come down in the United States over the last couple of weeks. So overall, we're certainly seeing energy prices really starting to pick up, oil prices really starting to show some strength. But again, when prices get to these levels, the kind of very crude politics of oil starts to come back into the equation. It'll be fascinating how things play out from here, because I think it'll be more of a supply side question once again, especially if we do start to see a very aggressive pickup in global economic growth.
And it's going to be not very good for consumers around the world, because particularly if people are struggling with job losses and reduced salaries. I don't know about you, but I was very much enjoying filling up my tank of fuel for about $60 or $70 rather than $120. So I'm not looking forward to the oil price getting up too much higher. Kyle, what's on your radar this week?
Well, for me, it's the biggest event for the week and probably the only high-impact macro event we have. And even the corporate calendar is a bit bare as well, but it's the US Federal Reserve meeting. So we've got the FOMC meeting. They're expected to keep policy settings pretty much as they are, so no changes to their asset purchasing program. Interest rates will remain effectively at 0%. It'll be interesting to see what they say about their Main Street lending facility, because they've had a lot of talk about this recently, you know, expanding the credit that they lend directly into medium to small businesses in the United States. But for me, what this meeting will be all about is the new projections that the FOMC are going to deliver about the economic outlook, and also what that potentially says about interest rate policy in the future. Now, I think what's been fascinating over the last week or so is we've seen an incredible lift in US Treasury yields. The yield curve steepened considerably, what we call a ball steepening, as market participants price in fundamentally better economic growth. So the US 10-year yield was up by about 25 basis points over the course of last week, roughly. Now, that's a huge risk to financial markets, because one thing that's fueled this rally in stocks, in fact, it could be, you know, the biggest thing that's fueled this rally in stocks, is low risk-free rates. So long-term yields being low, and that's driving flow into stocks. So I'll be very interested to see if there's any commentary around potential yield curve control programs from the Fed as their next policy tool to try and make sure that they obviously enable the economy to recover at an appropriate rate. But to keep yields low enough to support asset valuations, so that something of a correction in the stock market driven by higher bond yields doesn't effectively reverse contaminate the US economy. So this meeting, I think, is going to be very interesting about what the Fed says about the future, and as well as what they can do in the future to try and keep this, you know, rally in the stock market sustained, as well as obviously a broader pickup in US economic growth.
Okay. Thank you, Kyle. This has been The Short Squeeze, a podcast produced by The Age and Sydney Morning Herald in conjunction with IG Markets. You can follow daily stock market news on our live blog, and feel free to subscribe to this podcast via your podcast platform. You can catch us again next week.